Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
So right now, in the United States, the FDA has regulated that we have to label, the manufacturers have to label for the top eight allergens. Eight foods cause 90% of allergic reactions.
Right. Which are?
Which are peanuts, tree nuts, dairy, eggs, wheat, soy, shellfish, and finfish.
Fish?
Finfish. Fish with fins.
No, yeah, fish.
Fish, yeah.
That's it?
Yeah, and the ninth allergen.
Is that rare?
Which is sort of creeping into that 90% reaction is sesame.
Welcome to A Lot to Learn with Austin Rogers. For the guy who knows everything, he's still got a lot to learn.
That was the voice of Erin Darcy Mallower, and she is an allergy expert. In this program, we're going to talk about food allergies. Over 12 million Americans are affected by food allergies. About 5% of infants and 3 to 4% of the adult population. That doesn't sound like a lot, but it's basically the population of Tokyo at any time can become gravely ill or even fatally so from foods and contact with foodstuffs. 30,000 hospital visits a year and 150 deaths plague America from food allergies, and these rates are rising. Erin Darcy Mallower, the founder of Allergy Strong, is going to tell us more about how to keep ourselves safe and how it's not just about your own allergies, but it's about those around you. Enjoy and learn something. Welcome. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, good night. I have no idea what I can't even start my own podcast. Usually I would say welcome, good morning, good evening. You all know what I say. I have no idea what time it is. It's a podcast. Today is super fun because I think we're going to learn a lot with Erin Darcy Mallower, the founder of Allergy Strong and Allergy Awareness Consortium Group. She is the executive director, and we're going to talk about food allergies today. Welcome, Erin.
Thank you.
Full disclosure, Erin and I grew up together. Erin is the older sister of literally my best friend on earth, who we shall not name.
He who shall not be named.
Hey.
Yeah.
I know it's a deep subject, but I think we have the perfect person to make it a little bit more accessible and fun. I think I have a starting point for you.
All right.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I either read it or I saw a documentary where somewhere along the lines, roughly 20, 25 years ago, the federal government and its consortium of doctors gave bad advice. And now we have almost a lost generation of children who will have allergies for the rest of their lives based on some faulty advice over, say, a two-decade span.
You are right. But at the time, of course, it felt like solid, good advice.
Science evolves.
Absolutely. We were seeing at the time this rise in food allergies, this rise in peanut allergy in particular is what they were tracking, although that corresponds with a rise in overall allergies. And they didn't know what to do. And so when they looked at it, they thought, well, perhaps it has to do with an immune system that's too immature to process peanut allergies, or peanut protein, rather. Because, of course, food allergies are an immune system response. It's not a gastrointestinal response. It's an immune system response. So what they did was they said, why don't we delay introducing certain foods until various ages when we think the body can handle it better, and maybe that will keep food allergies from developing. And that was common guidance for a very long time, and frankly, common guidance through about 2017.
Oh, this is that new. The switch in ideology.
Yes.
Or the switch in the science is that new.
Very new.
Wow. So we have, you know, 5, 6, 3, 4, 7-year-olds who will be dealing with this if they develop an allergy, of course, because not everyone does.
Absolutely.
But what spurred me on that sort of story was I remember, I really think it was a documentary. Someone looked this up for me, but it was an American pediatrician. Mm-hmm. I believe he was an allergy specialist, and he was in a conference of pediatricians in either the Europe or the Middle East, but it was made up of both European and Middle Eastern doctors. And he gets up on the stage and he asks, how many of your patients have, you know, whatever it was, nut, maybe pine nut allergies or nut allergies? And like three hands went up in a conference room of 1,000. Okay. And he's like, what are we doing wrong? When if I ask this same question in a pediatrics conference in the United States, a third of the room would have gone up.
That's right. No, that's right. And a study conducted, I feel like we're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit, but a study conducted in about 2014, I might have my dates slightly wrong there, but around that time frame, were fascinating because they compared the populations of very genetically similar populations in England, where it's very much like here, Western Europe is a lot like the United States when it comes to food allergies. So a population of genetically similar children in England and those in Israel, and how they grow up in terms of the way they're fed from infancy on, mm-hmm. and their rate of developing food allergy. And they found that the kids in Israel with the same genetic composition as the kids in England had a much lower rate of allergies. So what were they doing differently?
Right.
You know, and so that's called the LEAP study, learning, I think, about peanuts or something.
Learning early about peanuts.
And that changed the guidance. That changed all the guidelines. It turns out the kids in Israel were being introduced to allergenic foods much, much earlier than those here.
And is that just by happenstance?
By culture in
some ways. You're gonna eat this anyway, so just eat it.
Yeah, and some of the, you know, early finger foods that we have here are Cheerios, things mm-hmm. like that. Their early finger foods is something called Bamba, and it contains peanut protein. It's kind of like a peanutty, like a cheese puff. It's something very similar to that.
Okay.
And so kids, there it can kind of dissolves in the baby's mouth. It's easy for, you know, first foods because they sort of just kind of mush up. And so they were getting exposure at a really young age, like in that 4, 5, 6, 7 month old time frame.
Right.
And then they weren't later on developing these allergies. So it taught scientists something about what's going on there in the immune system.
So
tolerance.
So that's a great point that allergies are immune system. The body thinks that something benign is actually dangerous. Is that correct? Is that it?
Yeah. So let's start from the beginning. What is a food allergy?
A lot of people
don't know what a food allergy is and how it differs from, let's say, like an intolerance or from something like celiac disease.
These are different things.
Different things. So a food allergy is an immune system response. It's when your body and its antibodies, which, you know, are sort of like an army for your body, fight off things that are benign to it, like foods. Usually those antibodies would fight off, you know, a virus or an infection or any kind of other sort of danger to your system. But these antibodies identify food proteins, and it's food proteins specifically. So it's not, let's say, sugars or other parts of food.
Right.
To get down to cell science. Go back to biology, everybody.
Right, well, because proteins have finite ends, and that's how they interact with other things, because there's a tail end of a protein.
Correct.
Other things are circles.
Right. So it finds these proteins.
Take that, Niels Bohr.
Yeah. Gotcha. And it attacks them, and when it attacks them, it comes in the form of hives, swelling, respiratory problems, cardiac issues, blood pressure issues, etc.
Everything.
What it does is it starts to shut down the body.
Because it's attacking everything indiscriminately.
Completely.
So the body believes that something benign is causing it to be under full bore, hardcore disease attack.
Full scale.
So it mobilizes the army and sends it
absolutely
onto itself?
Kind of. I mean, I think that these responses, you'd have to ask a doctor to get down to the very specifics of the cell science here, but these antibodies called IgE antibodies are the ones that are kind of out there just shutting the system down so that, you know, I guess it doesn't come under further attack. That obviously has the effect of potentially harming the person itself, him or herself, or it can cause fatalities.
I mean,
these are, you know, so it does lead to, not in every case, of course, but a severe reaction called anaphylaxis can lead to death, which is obviously super scary for anyone that has a food allergy.
Right. And then, you know, you've got people who blithely claim when they're selecting from a menu, I'm allergic to chicken. No, you're not. You just don't eat chicken. Like,
correct.
But there are other things. Can we call them allergen adjacents, or are they just completely different biologically, like celiac, or like is shellfish an actual allergy, or is that an intolerance?
So their intolerances are different.
Right.
They are usually gastrointestinal. They have to do with your body being able to break down the food, and typically the food that they can't break down, sugars.
Right.
So like when you're lactose intolerant, the O's at the end stands for a sugar protein, your body can't break down lactose, which is in milk and dairy products, and it can't break those down. It makes you feel pretty terrible.
Yeah.
Usually those are gastrointestinal symptoms. There are other intolerances like to gluten that makes you sensitive, and they can manifest themselves in different ways. And celiac disease is an autoimmune disease. So separate from an intolerance and separate from food allergies, it is an autoimmune disease. And as a result of this disease and the gastrointestinal symptoms that it causes, people have to avoid gluten.
So it being an autoimmune disease, does that mean you have it? This is not one, like allergies, you might not necessarily have and are developed. Oh my God, I don't even know where to start.
I know, it's confusing.
Yeah.
But if we stick to the food allergy part of it, yes, you can develop celiac disease at any point. You can also develop food allergies at any age. So you can become allergic to any food at any time, at any age.
Right.
So, you know, I always say,
so this isn't just awareness for children.
Right. That's what I was going to say. This is not a child's disease, and it's not, if you're unlucky and you're an adult that has food allergies and I'm not, I don't have to worry about it. It's kind of an everyone's problem sort of situation.
And peanuts on the airplane.
And it's correct. Peanuts on the airplane, you know, stuff in the restaurant. I mean, it does affect everybody. And it's one of those situations where it behooves everyone to know about it because doctors are calling it an epidemic because of the way it's increasing and rising.
Right. And because of the faulty narrative crafted by the
partly because of the way, I mean, they don't have a hard one reason they can tell you why these increases are happening. It's not only because of that the guidance, which again was well thought out at the time, and now we see that the reversal is probably more effective. But it's also, you know, the food that we eat, the bread that we eat today is not the bread that our grandparents ate. It's processed. The processing is different. Our level of cleanliness in terms of the way we aren't exposed to bacteria and other types of germs we're much more clean today than we were.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there's a genetic component, but that wouldn't account for the rise that we're seeing.
The other environmental factors plus, okay, so it's a complete system.
It's a complete system.
It's a complete system that has been increasing the amount of allergies.
Yeah.
So you can't kill a system, but you can mitigate factors of it.
As much as you, yeah.
Right.
In theory.
Yeah.
In theory.
Now, you're not working ahead to, you know, stop this in the future. You're working for people who are going through this right now.
That's right.
And families and friends and communities that are going through it right now. We'll leave the hard scientists for figuring out preventative, right, how to teach future parents how to not have this happen. But now we've got this so-called lost generation.
That's right.
How do we, these are our sons and our daughters and our younger nieces and nephews. Mm-hmm. No one's quite old enough to be, you know, or are they?
They are.
How old, when was the onset of this advice?
I don't know when the advice started specifically, but I know, I want to say it was sometime in the early 90s and maybe even the 80s. I'm not.
So these are husbands and wives now too.
Yes.
Yeah. It's not just preteen children. This is two decades of this.
Right. And beyond that, what they're finding, there was a recent study that came out, I believe either December or January, very, very recently in the last couple of months. And what they found was that one in every 10 adults, so 10% of adults, have food allergies. That's a higher number than the child population, than the younger population. In the younger population, 8% of kids have food allergies. That's one in 13, or as we say, two in every classroom.
Yeah.
For adults, that number is greater. So
do we not know?
Some of us don't know. It turns out that some of us don't know the difference between an intolerance and an allergy. That's one thing. And the second thing is a lot of us just know that that food doesn't make us feel good, and then we don't eat it, and we don't get it diagnosed, and we don't carry medication, and we don't know the sort of repercussions of accidental exposure.
Right. You just keep opening new doors. Are there different, like, grades? Is there a scale of severities of allergies? Or is an allergy full stop?
Doctors will tell you an allergy is an allergy full stop.
Right.
So what there are, though, is varieties of reactions. But while I say that, I hear a lot of people who will tell me, oh, well, you know, my child's allergic to peanuts, but he only gets hives. Doctors will tell you that, no, he only had, the last reaction was hives. Even if that's every reaction, they'll only say, no, you mean the last reaction was hives.
The last observed reaction.
Because every reaction could be different. So the next reaction could be full-blown anaphylaxis, and the one after that could be hives again. So you don't know when it's going to turn sort of critical and severe.
So you're never sort of allergic.
Correct.
You're allergic. It's binary. It's one or zero.
Yep.
You're allergic or you're not.
Correct.
But so you're like, I just get sort of allergic. Yeah, I get a red rash.
Yeah.
You got a red rash now. Who knows what happens in the future?
Yeah, the sense I get from doctors is that you are or you're not, and you need to be prepared. And that if you have a food allergy, you need to have the tools and the knowledge to treat your own allergy should you react.
Well, that's your level of expertise. Let's get into these tools and knowledge and how to, I guess, sort of boots on the ground this thing, right? Because that's the sphere you're working in.
That's right.
And you're working specifically with less fortunate populations and demographics who might not have the wherewithal. We're in suburban Virginia right now, so we're looking at affluence right now. But right across the river, we've got some poorer populations, and they might not even know what they're dealing with. And that's where Allergy Strong comes in.
Yeah, so Allergy Strong was born out of my blog Allergy Schmallergy, which I had started just because I was already doing the research because my own son has multiple food allergies. My in-laws had food allergies. So I figured if I'm doing the research, I should share it. And as my son and I were talking, we were at a food bank and he was looking around. We were sorting cans and goods that were being donated. And he looked around and he said, Mom, if I had to make a meal out of anything in here, I couldn't do it. I couldn't make a meal out of the stuff they're offering. And I thought, What happens when a family who's living paycheck to paycheck has food allergies? What kind of choices do they need to make? And right at the time I was sort of kind of pondering, wrestling with this question, I read a study, and it just had just come out at that time. It came out of Northwestern. And they calculated the cost of food allergies. And they calculated it at nearly $25 billion annually.
Mm-hmm.
That is the cost of food allergies. And the brunt of that cost falls on families.
Right.
About $20.8 billion fall on families in the form of lost job opportunities, both loss of productivity from having to take time away to
being a caregiver.
Yeah, exactly. Being a caregiver. Also lost opportunity in terms of not being able to take jobs or not being able to take jobs that travel because you can't be away from your child for very long in case there's an emergency. Perceived or real, those are real considerations for a lot of people. Labor productivity is another one, and then out-of-pocket expenses. I mean, if you ever look down the gluten-free or natural food aisle when they talk about free-from foods are a generic term from foods that are free from certain allergens.
Right.
They are very expensive, sometimes five times as much as its regular counterpart.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Why?
You know, different materials. I couldn't even tell you specifically, you know, sourcing. Part of it is also you have to make sure that the factory itself is cross-contamination free. So if you're producing something that's gluten-free,
right,
you can't also then produce on the same equipment something that has gluten. It would be difficult.
Right.
You know,
and so there's a capital investiture by the food manufacturer. And if I'm going to... Yeah, I immediately went straight for the cynical one, which is like, well, if we can make it more expensive, we can.
That
might be in there too. That'll be an upper. But there's some real practical reasons why this allergen free food would be more cost prohibitive.
Yeah.
So you've got everyone. The entire economy is exposed to this.
Yeah.
So we're all in this together, even though, you know,
I also hear some sort of side comments with people who say, well, glad it's not my problem. And I don't think they're necessarily being cruel. I think they're actually necessarily being appreciative.
Right.
But it is. It is. Because when your child has a play date with somebody, it's suddenly your problem. Or if you find yourself dating someone with food allergy, that's really your problem. Because you can't eat that food either.
Yeah.
If you want to kiss them at the end of the night or whatever. And if you fly in an airplane, I think
kissing,
we all know.
Kissing, what is that?
Oh, awesome. Let's go back to the basics, baby.
Okay.
If you've flown on an airplane, though, you know that it's your problem because sometimes they make announcements. Because, you know, peanuts and airlines go together like popcorn's a movie theater. Movie theaters, that. Right? And now it cracks me up because we don't eat peanuts any longer in our house. And so I do think it's kind of funny when people are like, how am I going to survive this flight?
Without peanuts.
A tiny bag of 10 peanuts. I don't know how I'm going to make it.
It's pretzels now.
Yeah,
so
it's better. It's better. But they do affect everyone because, we do need to keep people safe with food allergies.
And we're going to be living with this. And first we're going to be living with this because we've lived with it as humanity, but we're going to be living with this for a significant amount of time with this current generation who are coming to adulthood under food allergens. So there's a century of this that's going to be going on before maybe we restabilize to a lower level.
And by the statistics, it seems like if it's not you that has food allergies, it's someone you know.
Right, right. So when I was super young, I went to the Friendly's by the Mount Kisco Hospital.
Friendly's was so good.
The one I was born in. Yeah, behind the, what was that, Grand Union. It was a Grand Union, right?
It was a Grand Union.
Yeah, it's a Grand Union. It was between the hospital and the bowling alley.
Oh, I loved it. I used to beg my mom to take me there. They had Fribbles.
And you got to color on the placemats. But behind the Mount Kisco Hospital was a Friendly's. Mm-hmm. And it happened to be really convenient that hospital was there because I never tested it any further. But Friendly's watermelon ice cream... freezes, like, what? Okay, what's the reaction where your throat closes up and your eyes close up?
You're having swelling. I mean, that sounds like an allergic reaction.
That's what happened to me with Friendly's watermelon ice cream.
Oh my God.
So I just never went and ate Friendly's watermelon ice cream again.
Oh my, but I can understand. So I wonder what was in it.
I remember years later looking up the ingredients, and I don't think there were ingredients. I think there were just chemicals.
Yeah.
Because you can imagine what Friendly's watermelon ice cream tastes like.
It's not real watermelon?
And it's not real ice cream either. It's
breaking
neither. Because it wasn't a sorbet.
No,
it was a watermelon ice cream.
Something sounds weird.
It was. I remembered it tasting really great
until
my entire body swole up.
That's
so that, yeah, I couldn't see. My eyes fused shut, and I became hard of breathing.
Yeah.
I don't really remember what happened next.
That's like an anaphylactic reaction.
Right? I think my mom just drove me across the street
Smart.
To the hospital.
Yeah, she wasn't messing
I
around.
Think that's what it was. I actually don't remember that part. But I remember that sensation of not being able to breathe and feeling my eyes just swell closed and my eyelids puff up to the size of my thumb.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah, easily.
So I have a food allergy.
That's an anaphylactic reaction.
Yeah.
So reactions can vary wildly and they can go from anything as simple as some local hives. If you've been in contact with something, you can get systemic hives. That's where hives cover a large portion of your body. You can have swelling of the hands, the face, lips, ears, eyes, nose. You can have respiratory reaction like you did where your throat is closing or your lungs, you're wheezing, coughing, having trouble breathing. You can have gastrointestinal symptoms, vomiting. And you can have blood pressure symptoms like fainting. Some people report a sense of like doom, like they know something bad is happening. They can't describe it.
Do you know what that...
And it can result in cardiac arrest.
That feeling of doom, that's what 100% of people who are transfused the wrong type of blood feel. An impending sense of dread, Ooh. Doom, and death is upon you. And they can't explain why. And they start panicking. And then all of a sudden the doctors go, wrong blood type, wrong blood type, wrong blood type. And they have to change it out immediately.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. Well, what's fascinating that you brought it up because I remember reading about, you know, every wrong blood type transfusion.
Is that sense
of impending doom. And like, I don't know what that feels like because I can't. Can you
hard to imagine that? Especially
unless
you feel it,
impending doom, you know,
exactly.
Right?
Interesting.
Yeah.
Ooh, I know more about that too.
Yeah. So, but
yeah.
Clearly, there's. I mean, yeah. That's some sort of
it's a warning
immunological.
Yeah,
immune system
or neurological system
attack. Yeah.
What's
remarkable of all the things that you just listed off, all the variety of reactions, is the instantaneous nature of them.
Yeah.
The body just turns it on immediately and is like, meh, 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 red alert.
Yeah,
it's DEFCON 1.
It does not mess around.
Right? That's crazy. Because other things like your flus and your stuff like that, you fall into them, right?
Totally. They develop over time.
Yeah.
And you expect that of food allergies in a way. Like a lot of times people will say, but I just, especially adults who get food allergies later, will say, I ate this my whole life, and now I ate this one time,
uh-huh.
and it flipped on me.
Right.
My own father-in-law has a food allergy, which he got at age 40. It's like the worst-case scenario. He got it on a transatlantic flight, eating shrimp over the Atlantic Ocean. So he's like right there over the Atlantic Ocean, and he's suddenly going into anaphylaxis on this flight where he's had shrimp many times before. It was not a new food to him. And, you know, and he survived. But barely.
Do flight attendants, do they have EpiPens and stuff like that? I know they've got defibrillators, but...
So it's kind of a contentious issue. Not most airlines do not have EpiPens on board. I believe JetBlue does. I don't think most of the other ones do.
Uh-huh. There's another consideration you've got to take.
Deal.
I mean, of course, as a responsible parent, you should be carrying them in the first place or attaching them to your child.
What if you're like my father-in-law or there was a young boy who recently flew from Central America back to the United States, never had a food allergy diagnosis before, and suddenly goes into anaphylaxis on board that plane. He didn't know, so he couldn't have carried his epinephrine. He didn't have epinephrine because he didn't know.
Right.
And more people are finding themselves in those positions. Again, this is why everyone sort of needs to know a little bit about food allergies because it could be you.
I mean,
it really could.
Same as CPR.
Correct.
Why do we all know CPR? We don't need CPR for ourselves. We know CPR for our neighbor coming across a car accident or a swimming accident.
That's exactly right.
So we should know how to use the EpiPens.
Yeah, just the basic use of an epinephrine auto-injector. There's four on the market right now. They all get injected into the thigh, into the outer, it's called intramuscular injections, right into the outer thigh, and you hold it, and you always go to the emergency room. You always call 911 no matter what if you use that. It's sort of simple math, and it's always good to just ask somebody if you see them kind of going through distress, where do you keep your epinephrine? And if not, start yelling for it because someone has it. Again,
right.
By the numbers.
By the numbers, someone has it.
Someone near you has it.
This is really touching because you're like when I'm like you know, we were sort of like, Aaron's allergic to everything family, right?
Yeah.
And by the way, you laugh about it
totally.
Too, but you at the same time, you just pointed out, like, this isn't all of us thing. It's like
we're all in.
Yeah, we're all in. You know,
whether you want to be or not.
Right, right. But one of the common threads that has sort of touched through like many episodes of this podcast that one of my friends point out with is like every interview I do ends up somehow focusing back in on community, right? And I was thinking we're going to talk about this and how to deal internally with your own family situations and how to deal with a child. You're like, no, 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 no. It's everyone. It's the economy. It's your neighbors. It's your friends. And you might get in a situation where you might need to know these things too.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool,
yeah,
I guess.
I think that's really cool.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I'm always focused on kind of how we can all make each other better. And I find the few times that when we all, whether it's with food allergies or through music or through work or any other way that you do it, I mean, just anytime we're all in community with each other and doing stuff, I mean, I think we all leave feeling like we're better people.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
I'm feeling better about myself already.
Good.
And that's all that matters. Me feeling better about myself. Where were we? We keep getting sidetracked. But I think these sidetracks are informative. Yeah.
I think they're useful. Well, let me bring out a couple of things. We talked about reactions just now.
Yes, they're all different.
They're all different, and there's many types. And anaphylaxis is the name for a severe reaction, the one that might lead to cardiac arrest and death. And those are the ones that you kind of think about when you think of, you know, those big reactions happening that send you to the emergency room. But every 3 minutes, someone goes to the emergency room with a food allergy reaction. That's how common they are.
Mm-hmm.
200,000 people a year in the United States alone. United States, surprisingly, even though we were talking about it earlier, is not the country that has the largest number of food allergic people.
Ooh. Do you want
to take a guess?
Well.
Should we play a game?
Well, wait, do you mean the largest number or the largest proportion?
The largest percentage.
Okay, because if it's the largest number, it's China, because that's where all the people are.
It has to be.
I mean, statistically, it has to be.
It has to be there.
But the largest proportionate food allergy population. Oh, wow. No, I can't even hazard a guess because I'm taking into too many considerations. Like, I'm taking economics, I'm taking diets, I'm taking... no, I give up.
Australia. Yeah.
Yeah.
They even have a higher percentage than we do, and I'm not exactly sure what that number is, but I know that it's more common there than it is here in both children and adults.
So throwing another shrimp on the Barbie is potentially hazardous.
Yeah, you can't even do that anymore.
Wow.
Poor Australia. No, but they're also doing a lot of things right. For example, on their airlines, they do all have epinephrine auto-injectors.
Mm-hmm.
They all have them. That's pretty standard, which is kind of great. That is not standard here in the United States.
Yeah, well, I get if you're in the air over Australia, there is no place to land.
Correct.
You can't dive if you're flying Perth to Sydney.
Yeah.
And you're in the middle of Australia. You can't divert
not
the
so
747
yeah.
to O'Hare.
Not so much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not so much. But it's a good standard protocol. So there's some things that we can learn from each other and how we're handling food allergies.
Right.
For example. Some of the labeling laws is another issue. In the United States, we have certain laws that dictate how foods are labeled.
Yes.
Particularly allergens.
And this is new, too.
Relatively new.
Yeah.
Yeah, in 2000, I think it was enacted in 2006.
Yeah. That's new for us. We're old.
Yeah. It was so new.
I accidentally...
Like yesterday.
I accidentally wished Erin a birthday off by like 1 year the other day.
So
I'm like, happy ex-birthday. And she's like, what are you talking about?
How dare you?
I'm like, how far am I off? She's like, that'll be next year. Thank you very much.
Exactly.
I'm like, I'm off by 1 year. Come on.
Just wait. You'll understand. So right now in the United States, the FDA has regulated that we have to label, the manufacturers have to label for the top 8 allergens. Eight foods cause 90% of allergic reactions.
Right. Which are
peanuts, tree nuts, dairy, eggs, wheat, soy, shellfish, and fin fish.
Fish?
Fin fish. Fish with fins.
No, yeah, fish.
Fish, yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, and the ninth allergen.
Is that rare?
Which is sort of creeping into that 90% reaction is sesame.
Well, I've got a friend. We've got a mutual friend, one of Timmy's friends and my friend. He is allergic to like all nuts plus sesame. I thought sesame was in the same allergen family. Wait a second. Okay, hold on. Each of these eight plus one, the nine,
yeah.
They are all individual diagnoses?
Yes.
So if you have multiples,
you've got to balance the ingredient list with all of those things in them. So for example, my own son, when he was at first diagnosed, was diagnosed to peanuts, tree nuts, dairy, eggs, wheat, and soy, and sesame.
Right.
So he basically, on that list, could only have had shellfish and fish.
Right.
And I remember at the end of, they hung up the phone, and I'd never dealt with food allergies except for our friend. My mind was reeling as to what I was doing, you know, what I was going to do. And I looked at my husband, and I said, what are we going to feed him for dinner?
Right now.
Right now.
Yeah, like literally like right now.
In an hour.
Yeah.
What can he eat now that we know this? Like what, how, this changes everything about how we
think. Oh my God, I didn't even think of that. It's instantaneous too. Because
instant.
You gotta eat. So it's like, wait,
yeah.
What, lunch is in 20 minutes.
Yeah.
What can I make?
What can I eat now?
Cheese sandwich. No, I can't make that. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Chicken.
Nope, breading. Because he was little, right?
Yeah.
He was like a tiny little cat.
Oh my God.
He was 15 months old. What do you feed him?
Milk.
Right. Nope, allergic.
What? Wait, dairy's in there too?
Dairy.
Oh my God.
Wait, it was a challenge.
Did you get, is soy in there too?
Soy's in there too.
So you can't have soy milk?
Nope.
What the?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so,
okay.
So it was a major challenge immediately.
Okay, yeah.
Immediately.
It, like literally immediately.
Yeah, smacks you in the face.
Oh my God.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's a nuclear bomb dropped in the household.
Totally.
Like, I got to throw out my entire cupboard now.
And that's exactly what I did.
Yeah.
I mean, I took everything out. I read the back of every ingredient label, and I just...
I mean, I would just throw...
I just donated everything.
I would just throw everything out
and just
have a clean house and then just build it foundationally from there.
Build it back. And that's a lot... That's exactly what a lot of families do.
But again...
Where do you start?
And we're in affluent suburban Virginia.
Right.
Where do you start if you don't have the resources to throw out the 6 to 8 months of food you've accrued from the weekly?
Right. Exactly. And now are you, you know, so you get this diagnosis, you know, the top eight, that's my son's allergies were like six of the top eight.
Yeah.
And you know, am I familiar yet with the labeling laws? No. And so now the law says that they have to label for those top eight, not sesame. So what it means is that they have to label directly. So if they put, let's say, cream in a product, they can't label it as cream, or let's say it's whey, which is another cream-based milk, you know, milk-based product. They have to label it as milk or dairy.
Right.
It has to say somewhere dairy. Even if
dairy.
Parentheses, bold at the bottom, it has to say somewhere in
this food plain contains language. Dairy products.
In plain language, right. Because there's a lot of different ways to say things. But when it comes to sesame, they can call it sesame, they can call it tahini, they can call it benny seed, they can call it benny oil, they can call it any number of different names. And I have to know all of them to make sure it's not in the food that he eats.
Oh my God.
Especially imagine, again, if you have multiple food allergens prior to this law, it was very difficult. This covered a lot of people. But if you deal with an allergen outside the top eight, we call it the top eight, it is this challenge. Now, the other thing that you need to know about labeling laws is that the may contain statements, which if you read labels, you see them very frequently, and they're becoming more and more frequent, may say, may contain eggs, may contain wheat, or made in a factory.
Made in a factory that also processes nuts. Yeah.
Those are voluntary statements. They're not required. So when they have them there, it means the manufacturing is offering that information to you. When you don't have them there, it doesn't mean anything.
Right.
It means you have to call the manufacturer one by one and try to get them to give you more information about their manufacturing techniques, which is its own, you know, boondoggle.
Because who really knows that?
Yeah, your customer service doesn't often have the information.
Yeah.
They're getting, again, over time, they've gotten much better. But
well, yeah, because that one
difficult.
Snack is manufactured in 14 different facilities around the country.
Right. So you're looking for a certain code on a barcode it's a whole thing. So so those are challenges. Now, when you're dealing with an allergen outside the top eight, you can be dealing with very long lists. So right now we're helping a family that is dealing with multiple food allergies, including corn. Corn
is literally everything we eat.
And I mean like literally.
Literally.
Like the wax on fruit.
Corn.
Corn.
Yep.
The like moisture pad underneath the berries.
Corn.
You got it.
Yep.
Ascorbic acid.
Corn.
It's corn. You know, baking powder.
Corn.
Baking starch. You know, like it just goes on. Sugar. Salt.
Corn. Yeah, those are all corn now.
Everything has corn.
Yeah.
So it can be, and corn is not required to be labeled as corn. So you have to know that xanthan gum is corn. I mean, Xanthan gum is corn, or at least partially sometimes.
Yeah.
But then how do you know when it is and it's not? You got to call. So it's, you know, purchasing food when you have food allergies can be a tremendous process and an extreme challenge. So you can imagine when, if you're, let's say, hosting someone with food allergies, how brands make such a huge difference, because a pretzel is not a pretzel is not a pretzel. One pretzel is safe, one pretzel is not, one pretzel is manufactured in a way that's, you know, got cross-contamination, and that's an issue. And keep in mind that one little bite, I mean, a bite the size of a period on a paper can cause a major reaction. So, you know, people are not being paranoid. They're being realistic.
Right.
I know a lot of people think that, you know, people with food allergies are just being, you know, really paranoid and they're just very demanding and, you know. No, they're being realistic because
right.
it could result in them being in the hospital or dying. I mean, and
yeah.
if you would be too.
And, you know, when we were kids growing up, we did terrible, unspeakable things that
yeah.
everyone did.
No, yes, yeah. no, but, you know, we didn't know this.
No,
stuff.
No.
This was not common knowledge.
We'd throw peanuts
yes.
at that one guy. Just throw peanuts at him.
Aww.
I mean, it was funny then, but now it's like, this is,
yes.
that's basically
you
like.
You would never do it now.
No, it's basically just, like shooting at him.
No, you know, yes.
yeah.
It is. You know better.
It is.
You know better, you do better,
yeah.
right?
Yeah,
yeah.
So, you know who you are, Dan.
I almost said your name, Dan.
You know who you are, Dan. I'm sorry. I'm sorry we threw peanuts at you.
And by the way, he's like a tremendous resource for me because he works in the hospitality industry.
Yes.
And he is like, I can't tell you how many times I write a piece or I appear somewhere and he will call me later and give me either an anecdotal story
right.
or some realities that I hadn't thought of.
Right.
Because, you know, since he's an adult and
yep.
grew up with this and or perspective on how things have changed. I mean, he's been a humongous resource. So I appreciate it. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you, Dan. No more peanut throwing.
Yeah.
oh, wait. You said something. You said something that really touched a nerve back there. Corn is everything. Oh, yes. You were helping a specific family.
Yeah.
I want to talk about what that process is and how you guys at Allergy Strong sort of like formulate a plan of attack.
Yeah, so to date, most of the help that we've been trying to do has been in the form of getting educational resources and giving seminars to food pantries and food banks and related organizations.
Ah, so at least that way you can cover the most ground of good as possible by dealing with people who help the less fortunate
yes.
all simultaneously.
And doing it very quickly.
Yes.
You know, it's easy to get the word out, easy to, for them to download resources,
yep.
easy for them to pass on resources if
yep.
need be. We talk to organizations that offer free lunch programs or summer lunch programs for children. So we do a lot of that kind of outreach. I had this case come to me, and they are within our local area. And so we are just, you know, it's a mother and two children, and
right.
I would never say no to that.
Right.
So we've been so lucky because, you know, my readers and the people that follow this kind of stuff have reached out and through an Amazon food drive have been donating very brand specific. I did all the research on what would be corn free and they've been donating goods and we're going to support them for the duration of this transition that they're under.
Right. While they figure out what their new regimen is going
yeah,
to be.
Yeah, what their new reality is.
Yeah.
And they are in a transition period and being helped by other organizations that are following their case, you know, very closely. And so we're providing the food piece and trying to eliminate the stress of having to worry about buying $15 milk or you know $20 bread.
Right,
you know.
Right. I like the approach of educating you know community outreach and pantry and shelter systems. So when someone new comes into the system, they've already been briefed on it, so it's not an unknown for them, and that really it maximizes the effect of helping in a very quick and tangible way.
Yeah, and it allows food pantries, food banks, and shelters to be prepared for guests with food allergies. When
right.
people come in, it allows them to have maybe already had a gluten-free food drive or carry some dairy-free milk. It allows them to know that in a shelter, they're going to need access to a refrigerator because they need their own products on hand, they can't eat from, let's say, a buffet line, or that's not safe in terms of cross-contamination, and probably not even in terms of the meal itself.
Right.
So they need access to a hot plate and a microwave, a refrigerator, or something similar. So it gives them some time to prepare for that sort of eventuality.
And to retain a large stock, or at least an ample stock of shelf-stable, break glass in case of emergency.
Yeah,
we've got someone, okay, it's not going to be the best meal, but at least we know it's going to be nutritious
going.
And, yeah.
It gets you going.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
That's really cool. And now I recently heard from a little fly on the wall that your impact and your visibility is gaining a little bit with you've got a new project you're working on.
I do have a new project.
Tell us about
All
it.
All right. So
Erin's not one to toot her own trumpet.
No,
so
getting comfortable.
You're gonna do it now, baby.
All right, I'm in. So I'm producing a video series with Comcast, and what we're doing is producing an educational series for patients and caregivers, but truly for everyone who's interested in learning a little bit more about food allergies. There's something to be gained and a lot of really interesting stories in there. It's a, I don't know, 30-something segment series on food allergies, and it's a 360-degree view. So it's not just, it goes from everything on the medical side, what is a food allergy, what is epinephrine, how do you carry an auto injector? What happens when you call 911? It also touches on some of the psychosocial pieces, like anxiety. Anxiety is a big part of having food allergies, unfortunately.
It's like walking around like thinking a piano is going to fall on your head all the time.
Right. So managing anxiety.
And not like one of those cool, funny pianos where the birds fly around you, but like a swell up and everything piano.
Totally. No, yeah. Totally. So it's the anxiety piece, it's bullying, it's self-advocacy, empowerment. So it's some of the psychosocial pieces, how to deal with the stigmas of having food allergies or being a caregiver, because there's a lot of stigmas and you hear a lot of sort of snarly side comments about a variety of things that can be very hurtful. It's also how to deal with it kind of out in the world, dining, dating, school, college. It's not just elementary school. It's, you know, getting into college, getting into the workforce, flying. And we have some really, really cool and amazing experts who are contributing. I'm so thankful for their expertise because they are people that I kind of revere in my own life and their reference material, you know, for me.
Right.
And to sit with them was like amazing to hear what's going on.
Well, it's also pretty cool because I don't know if by design or not, but you're creating a one-stop shop.
I was
like,
hoping
you're creating a wiki for allergies and allergens.
I'm trying to make it so that, you know, because it's just not a paper diagnosis. You know, it's not just you have food allergies, you take this medicine, you're good. It really changes everything about your life and about the way you approach not just food, but social gatherings and a whole bunch of other stuff. And it does change you. I mean, it really does. And so, and it has to.
It has to.
So I aimed to address all of that. So that someone who's coming new into the system can gain some knowledge, someone who's been there for a while, who's had food allergies for a while, has something to gain from it, someone who's in a transition with it, you know, moving schools or switching jobs or dating for the first time or dating someone new, has a piece to gain, you know, in this series. So that's what we've been doing. It's been really exciting. And I like I said, I've learned a lot. I as much interview someone as I do scribble notes for my own edification. Like,
right,
I'm just
right.
I'm so fascinated by what everyone's saying.
Right. What's the name of this project, by the way?
We are naming it as we speak. So we'll update you with some and we'll.
Got it. And you know what we'll do? We'll coincide the launch of this podcast with the launch of that project.
Oh, that'd be great.
We'll have it go at the same time.
Perfect.
So you're listening to this. Well, we don't know yet.
In the near future,
you're listening to this. Well, the near future for us, but it's now for you, which is then for after your. Wait, all right, got confused there. Well, also in addition to this amazing thing, which we'll have the link on the Twitter and the link on the Facebooks and the Instagrams. Where can everyone follow you, Erin? Follow Allergy Strong and Allergy Schmallergy.
Yeah, so I have a blog, which is schmallergy.wordpress.com. Allergystrong.org is our website. So I'm on Twitter with @schmallergy and Facebook, you know, Allergy Schmallergy. You can find me there too.
Awesome.
Instagram everywhere, yeah.
Instagram.
Yeah.
What do you Instagram?
A lot of food.
Oh, like super healthy meals that you can make for that are allergy free and stuff like that.
Meals, sometimes just awesome stuff. Sometimes just products that I happen to run across. Sometimes I'm really excited about. Like, I get really nerdy about.
Oh, like you see products. Like, yeah, you like, see something and you're like, oh my God, this is this.
That's awesome.
This checked all the boxes.
Or like, we recently were in New York and my son hasn't had a safe donut in like what feels like 100 years. He used to love Krispy Kreme, and then Krispy Kreme started making a Nutella donut and it blew the whole line. So now they nothing's safe at Krispy Kreme. And so we went to this donut shop in New York City called the Donut Pub. And we were so excited that we bought like 3 dozen donuts. And so I had to, of course, Instagram that whole experience from top to bottom. I was like taking pictures all over the place. And I actually looked at the woman who was waiting on us, getting us like our 36,000 donuts. And I said, does every food allergy family do this? And she's like, yep.
Everyone.
That's so funny.
Hey, that's actually, that's a point actually we didn't even talk about, which is the brands who embrace this. You've got a built-in, if you get a built-in loyalty, Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you do it right, yeah, there are some brands that are really doing it right. They label correctly. They add extra, voluntarily add extra information for us to interpret. You've got a loyal following.
Yeah.
And the key thing, I think, in kind of all areas when it comes to food allergies is just giving people guidelines. You don't have to cater to everyone. You can't possibly cater to everyone's allergies. That's just an impossibility.
Right.
But to give us guidelines in schools, on airplanes, clear policies, clear guidelines on what you expect or what you're willing to provide gives us a chance to work around things. When we don't have clear guidelines, it becomes really difficult. So so brands that, for example, offer more information, that's a guideline.
Right.
It allows me to make a decision about whether that could be safe for our family or not.
Right.
So the more the better.
Yeah. And I think that's ultimately what you're working at, Erin, getting the most information out there, excuse me, as possible. And hopefully this new Comcast project will do it concisely and at least in a more accessible manner for the most possible people to get the best possible good out of it by you having done the legwork for them.
That's
awesome. So you're really doing good. Everyone, please go to allergystrong.org and smallergy.wordpress.com and smallergy at Twitter and smallergy on Instagram and look forward to seeing this awesome, awesome, awesome project. And my mind is blown and I'm never going to look at this subject ever again in the same way. Erin D'Arcy Mallower, thank you so much.
Thanks, Austin.
Bye.
Bye.
This has been A Lot to Learn with Austin Rogers, which is produced by me, Austin Rogers, alongside Maria Gibson and Limitless Media. If you like what you're hearing, follow us on patreon.com/AustinRogers and give us a donation, because this is not free. It takes a lot of time and effort to make one of these. Follow me on Twitter at Austin Tylero, Instagram at Agra27. And if you have any suggestions on what you want to hear in future episodes, tweet at me or send me a direct message or whatever it is the kids do today. Everyone, have a lovely December. Sure, December. Why not?
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.